2 hours universal time. This is Radio RFA, the voice of South Africa, broadcasting from Johannesburg. We're transmitting to the United States of America and Canada, and our frequencies are 15120 kilohertz in the 19 meter band, 11935 kilohertz in the 25 meter band, 9580 kilohertz in the 31 meter band, and 9615 kilohertz also in the 31 meter band. In our transmission, first the news, after that our news magazine, and then Willie Camilleri with Sport RSN. As you will have heard, this is the last transmission to listeners outside Africa, and we'll be ending this broadcast with a special message by the manager of the English service of Radio RSN. Now we start with the news, read by Colin Jackson. In this bulletin, the South African Minister of Constitutional Development says the government will insist on a clear and unambiguous commitment to peaceful political change by all taking part in negotiations. The Angolan Minister of Foreign Affairs has expressed confidence that planned negotiations with UNITA should bring peace to the country. The Cabinda Liberation Front says four French nationals have been taken hostage at the border between the Angolan oil-rich enclave of Cabinda and the Congo. And rebels in northern Ethiopia say they've captured another town in the Eritrea province. The South African Minister of Constitutional Development, Dr. Herbert Viljoen, says the government will insist on a clear and unambiguous commitment to peaceful political change by all taking part in negotiations. Speaking to media representatives in Cape Town, Dr. Viljoen said this implied abandoning violence and intimidation and a cessation of references to continuing the armed struggle. Dr. Viljoen said a normalized political process required at least two fundamental conditions. These were the lifting of restrictions imposed by the state, as well as ending violence, intimidation, and the armed struggle. He said during this week's meeting with the African National Congress in Cape Town, the government is prepared to discuss matters such as lifting of state of emergency and definitions of political offenses, with a view to releasing prisoners, also with a view to the return of exiles and indemnity against prosecution. Dr. Viljoen said that while the government realized the need to normalize the political process, it also had a responsibility to ensure the maintenance of stability, law and order. It was announced earlier that the talks to be held this week between the government and the African National Congress, focusing on obstacles to negotiations, would be held at the Fortescue Estate in Cape Town. The South African Minister of Trade and Industry and Tourism, Mr. Kim Durr, well, he's looking at a long-range plan for trade relationships among the countries on the rim of the Indian Ocean. Introducing the debate on his budget vote in Parliament in Cape Town, Mr. Durr said this was a potential market of 1,000 million people who had a great natural affinity. The countries in southern, central and eastern Africa, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, parts of the Near East and Gulf region and the Indian Ocean islands share many common interests. These included proximity, the Indian Ocean, a common history and language, similar legal systems, and they all fell outside many of the economic groupings in the world. Mr. Dare said the Indian community in South Africa had a leading role to play in helping to unlock this region for the new South Africa. Mr. Dare told Parliament South Africa was moving ahead in the Balkans, the Baltic, Central and Eastern Europe, Africa, Southern Africa, and the Far East. He said South Africa was aware that a winning nation had to remain a global player, and he said South Africa was breaking new ground all the time. The Angolan Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Pedro de Castro Fandunu, has expressed confidence that planned negotiations with UNITA could bring peace to the country. Mr. Fandunem told reporters in Lisbon after a 75-minute meeting with the Portuguese Prime Minister, Mr. Anibal Cavaco Silva, that he was convinced the obstacles that still existed between the two parties could be overcome at the next round of secret talks. Both sides declined to say where or when the talks would be held. The Portuguese Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs, Mr. José Durão Barroso, announced at the weekend that the first direct talks between the two warring factions had been held at Evora, 120 kilometers east of Lisbon, and that was last week. A timetable for negotiation was agreed at the meeting. The Cabinda Liberation Front says four French nationals have been taken hostage at the border between the Angolan enclave of Cabinda and the Congo. The Front, which is fighting for the independence of Cabinda from Angola, said they had abducted four employees of the Health Congo Oil Company. The Front spokesman said that 11 people, mostly French and Congolese, were captured during a raid on an Health Congo camp south of the Congolese city of Pointe Noire, near the border. Seven hostages had been later released. The coastal enclave of Cabinda is bordered by the Congo and Zaire. This news bulletin comes to you from Radio RHA, the voice of South Africa in Johannesburg. Rebels in northern Ethiopia say they've captured another town in the Eritrea province where their supporters are advancing on the provincial capital of Asmara from the south. A spokesman for the Eritrean People's Liberation Front said its forces recently wiped out the army garrison at Bigza, which is about 70 kilometers south of Asmara. It was the third town in southern Eritrea which the EPLF claims to have captured in a week, following Sanafe and Adikaye. All three are on the main road leading south from Asmara toward the capital of Addis Ababa. Foreign schools were yesterday preparing to close weeks ahead of schedule as hundreds of expatriates continued their exodus out of Liberia for fear of a rebel attack on the capital of Monrovia. The departure of foreign nationals prompted the American Cooperative School to close on Friday, while the Elwa School, run by the Protestant Sudan Interior Mission, is expected to close this week, 6 weeks ahead of schedule. The French and British schools are also expected to shut down this week. The leader of the National Liberation Front, Mr. Charles Taylor, said on Saturday, that his troops had advanced within 2 hours of Monrovia and could strike at any time. The London-based charity Oxfam has been forced to withdraw a leaflet calling for continued economic sanctions against South Africa, because this may be breaking Britain's charity laws. The move came on the weekend that Oxfam was to have launched an appeal for $1.6 million called Frontline Africa for its charity work in South Africa and neighboring states. The commission, which regulates British charity agencies, said on Friday that it would inquire if Oxfam broke the law in advocating and campaigning for political change in the United Kingdom or abroad. It said charities could not have political objectives. A senior cabinet minister in the South African national state of KwaZulu has called on the African National Congress to end its armed struggle and to stop using alleged intimidation as a strategy for gaining support. The Minister of Work, Chief Simon Gomere, speaking in Ulundi, north of Devon, strongly criticized the African National Congress's commitment to sanctions and violence and asked if, once blacks had achieved full political rights, would the ANC employ the people who had lost their jobs because of sanctions? Chief Gumede also posed the question of whether the ANC would ever be able to woo foreign companies back to South Africa to invest in a future free country. He also asked whether the African National Congress could provide a viable economy through nationalization. The top anti-narcotics official in Nigeria says that his country is doing more than any other African national state to crack down on heroin trafficking. The head of the newly created National Drug Law Enforcement Agency, Mr. Fidelis Oyakhilome, rejected charges that Nigeria had become a leading supplier of drug couriers and also a transit point for smuggling Southeast Asian heroin to the West. Mr. Oyakhilome said that despite the dozens of recent arrests of Nigerians at airports around the world, Nigeria refuses to be made a scapegoat in the global war against drugs. Mr. Oyakhilome says that Nigeria was making more efforts than any other African country and was the fourth to sign in 1988 the anti-drug United Nations Convention that some great nations have not yet ratified. And to end the news, the main point again. The South African Minister of Constitutional Development, Dr. Gerrit Viljoen, says the government will insist on a clear and unambiguous commitment to peaceful political change by all taking part in negotiations. The Angolan Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Pedro de Castro Fandunen, has expressed confidence that planned negotiations with UNITA could bring peace to the country. The Cabinda Liberation Front says four French nationals have been taken hostage at the border between the Angolan enclave of Cabinda and the Congo. And rebels in northern Ethiopia say they've captured another town in the Eritrea province, where their supporters are advancing on the provincial capital of Asmara from the south. And that's the end of the news from Radio RFA, the voice of South Africa. Africa South.
Events and developments in Southern Africa.
Will be on Cape Town this week as the South African government and the African National Congress will try to progress on the way to constitutional negotiations. Observers expect the exploratory talks to focus on violence. This report from Stan de Prater.
Most political observers agree that the talks will not produce a miracle recipe for an immediate start of the real negotiations. All the parties involved, not only the government and the ANC, have expressed their concerns on the issue of remaining stumbling blocks before talks can begin in earnest. There seems to be only one point on which everyone is able to agree. The prospects for negotiations in South Africa to get underway have never been better. This feeling of cautious optimism does, however, not exclude the possibility that talks could fail to materialize. The ANC says it still adheres to the Harare Declaration, calling for the release of all political prisoners, the lifting of the state of emergency, and the withdrawal of the troops from the Black Townships before negotiations can start. The government feels that the emergency regulations cannot be scrapped under the present circumstances, referring to the unrest in Natal, which is apparently spreading to townships in the Johannesburg and Cape Town areas. The government points out that the ANC has not been able to control its own supporters. A call by ANC Vice President Nelson Mandela on his Natal supporters to throw their weapons into the Indian Ocean has gone unheeded. The ANC was also proven to be involved in the destabilization of the independent and self-governing states. In other words, it could be expected that the government will demand a clear commitment by the ANC leadership to peaceful strategies, renouncing the armed struggle. The ANC would like to link the end of its strategy of violence with the end of what it calls the violence inherent to the apartheid regime. It is thus clear that both parties are still miles apart, but time, or the lack of it, could play a positive role. The ANC is acutely aware of the strengthening of the Pan-Africanist Congress, which has condemned the talks between the government and the ANC as a sellout. And President F.W. de Klerk would like to embark on his European tour with a couple of extra aces in his hand. Diplomatic isolation of and sanctions against South Africa are another major stumbling block, and recent indications are that the international community is unlikely to respond favorably to the ANC's request of continued isolation. Both the government and the ANC have now crossed their Rubicon and find themselves in front of Rome's gates. Talks from Wednesday to Friday could create the climate in which real negotiations can begin. Unfortunately, Radio RSA will then no longer be able to inform its listeners outside Africa on this important development.
That report from our political correspondent, Stan de Prater. Meanwhile, members of the African National Congress delegation to the talks with the government later on this week attended a rally in Mitchell's Plain yesterday. Ami Namak Chand reports.
Speaking for the first time in South Africa since they went into exile 27 years ago, the Secretaries General of the ANC and the Communist Party, Mr. Alfred Zoe and Mr. Joe Slovo, spelled out the purpose of their mission, which was essentially to remove any obstacles to negotiation. Mr. Zoe told the crowd, which braved the cold Cape wintry conditions to welcome their leaders, that the presence of the external delegation was a reflection of the changing times in South Africa. He said the ANC appreciated State President Mr. F.W. de Klerk's bold step towards facilitating negotiations, but cautioned there were still several hurdles to be overcome.
The release of our leaders, Nelson Mandela, Walter Sisulu, and many others, represent such change. The unbending of the African National Congress and other organizations is testimony to the fact that South Africa shall never be the same again. Ours is a society in transition to a new order. The African National Congress welcomes these changes. Small steps indeed they are, but they must point in one direction, and one direction only: the creation of a society free of the crime of apartheid.
Mr. Zoe also emphasized the need to create a climate favorable for negotiations, but warned their demands would not be handed down as a gift.
The African National Congress recognizes the fact that good possibilities have been made for a political resolution of our country's problems. We are here because we wish to respect and nourish that possibility and to turn it into reality. To do so does not mean that we should abandon our principles. We must hold firm to the goals we cherish while exercising maximum flexibility in our day-to-day work.
Also sharing the platform was the Secretary General of the Communist Party, Mr. Joe Slovo, who stated they had come to South Africa in a spirit of conciliation, and if there was a way forward without bloodshed, they would grab such an opportunity with both hands. Mr. Slovo said Mr. de Klerk had gone further than his predecessors in facilitating negotiations, and he did not express any reservations that Mr. de Klerk would go further.
Like other liberation movements, we accept that the moment may arrive when negotiation and even a degree of compromise is in the interest of what the people are struggling for. And we thank to Mr. de Klerk in all sincerity that we will be ready to walk through the door if we see real prospects of moving speedily towards real democracy.
Referring to the protection of minority rights, Mr. Slovo said the ANC would be the last organization to tamper with the religious, cultural and other freedom of whites and other groups.
That report from Ami Nanakchand. Changes in the political climate in South Africa have produced some strange bedfellows. With the arrival from Lusaka of the African National Congress delegation to take part in talks this week with President de Klerk, the South African police and the African National Congress's own security personnel have joined forces to ensure the safety of the ANC delegation for the duration of the talks. Colleen Hendricks reports.
The South African police are responsible for the safety of the former security prisoners, exiles, and other members of the ANC delegation. Yet nothing is done without the blessing of the ANC and its allies. The first case of the new Hopoche move could be seen at Durbanville Airport last week when the Lusaka contingent of the ANC came to Cape Town. Uniformed members of the SAP restricted entry into the airport building to government officials, senior members of the UDF and ANC, and accredited journalists. To identify people entering the building, UDF officials were on hand to help the boys in blue, those men they love to hate. This weekend, the SAP was also responsible for the security of the ANC delegation, which is staying in a luxury Cape Hotel. While the ultimate responsibility lay with the police, access to the wing accommodating the ANC was strictly controlled by the organization's own Securitate. Jointly, they kept the press and public at bay. They watched us, and we watched them. Once the ANC delegation had arrived at the hotel, the police changed from blues to civvies, making it more difficult to distinguish who is who. I watched how three black security men had their pictures taken to remember this occasion. Yet, for an outsider, it was difficult to determine whether they were SAP or ANC.
United States President George Bush has denied that the United States is losing interest in Africa. The President was speaking to a small group of radio reporters on the United States' attitude towards changes in Eastern Europe and how they affected America's commitment to Africa. He also spoke at some length on the issue of sanctions. Connie Lawn reports.
President Bush was asked about concerns by some black Americans that the administration does not give the same type of attention to southern Africa as opposed to eastern Europe. He acknowledged the concern and then launched into an explanation of his sanctions policy.
What's your response to that?
Well, I think there is that concern. And what I want to do is dispel that concern, because I think we had a fruitful role in the independence of Namibia, or candidly. And I think if it hadn't been for Secretary Chester Crocker, who worked to get this pullback of South African forces and worked to remove Cuban troops from Angola, I don't think Namibia would be going along as well as it is today. So to those Americans who think that our administration, or me, the president, that I care less about the independence of Namibia or the elimination of apartheid in South Africa, let me just use this opportunity to say that isn't true. And I'm proud of the progress that has been made in Bolivia. I'm encouraged by what I hear Mr. Mandela saying, and indeed what we're hearing Mr. de Klerk saying. So if we can facilitate the political process in South Africa to eliminate the results of which would be the elimination of apartheid, then we've really done something. Now, what can a president do? We've got some leverage, not much. We can keep saying from the Oval Office, we abhor apartheid, and there can be no normal relations with these countries unless it is eliminated. Namibia, I think we're going to be able to help Namibia in terms of economic support as they begin their process of democracy, as they begin their process of freedom.
President, I think it's a while ago that you were encouraged by what Mr. Mandela has to say. Does that also mean that you support his continued call for economic sanctions against the Pretoria government?
We're not going to change our laws on that. Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not one who thinks that sanctions have been particularly effective, because I think there's been a higher incidence of unemployment in blacks in South Africa. But our law is such that existing sanctions will remain until I can certify in good conscience that there's real progress. But what's happening is fascinating, because a bipartisan delegation, which included Mr. Dellum, who wanted to increase sanctions, a delegation headed by Bill Gore, a very evil black leader in the Congress, came back and said, no, we want to leave it where it is. We shouldn't increase, we certainly shouldn't remove. And that's about where I am today. And I accept their judgment. As a matter of fact, there were a couple of very conservative Republicans on that delegation who didn't want sanctions at all, who came back and told me, Mr. President, leave it where it is. Leave it where it is and give this fragile dialogue that we hope will begin some chance to succeed. So I think we're positioned just about right now.
A large number of congressmen who recently met with the president of the White House say they do concur with his stand on sanctions. They predict no new sanctions at this time, but do not know when the existing ones will be rolled back.
Connie Lawn reporting from Washington. Well-known British television interviewer Brian Walden has argued in the London Sunday Times for a more intellectual approach to South Africa's problems. This report from Fred Robinson.
Brian Walden is today undoubtedly one of the best interviewers on British television. To be a good interviewer presupposes a good understanding of the subject matter. In the art article he wrote in the Sunday Times, he disclosed some of that. He started by cautioning that the word apartheid should not be used to mean anything that people have approved of in South Africa. It was his clear understanding from conversations with President Abdab in public and in private that injustices will be eradicated. The question is therefore not whether apartheid will disappear, it will. The question must now be what will replace it. Here there will be a great difficulty in reconciling the ideas of the ANC and the National Party, especially as far as the conflict between views on private ownership and the redistribution of wealth are concerned. Continuing the argument he discussed at length with the president during the interview, he said President de Klerk's insistence on the maintenance of private property ownership would no doubt be non-discriminatory in terms of race, but would be a certain formula to maintain the status quo for some time. It will be a recipe for the slow redistribution of wealth without causing undue alarm to judiciary rights. At the same time, the devolution of power to local level would give white communities the opportunity in a seemingly undiscriminatory way to prevent black settling among them. On the other hand, he warned against expecting too much from Mr. Nelson Mandela, who had to fight off the militant demands of young ANC followers, people who would find it difficult to sign an agreement with President Mikhail Gorbachev, let alone with President de Klerk. If the ANC could not restrain its followers, there would be very little point in signing any agreement at all. Walden's conclusion was that South Africa's agony was not over yet, as the country's problems were of great complexity. This is Fred Robinson in London.
The Charity Commission in Britain is to investigate a new campaign by Oxfam, and the purpose is to see whether Oxfam is breaking the law. The commission fears the Oxford-based charity are involved in undue political activity in its fight against famine and poverty in Southern Africa. Keith Chalkley reports that as a result, the charity has changed its tactics and so it appeals to the ANC.
Oxfam has withdrawn calls for continued sanctions against South Africa following a strong complaint from the Charity Commission of political bias. The Commission has ordered an immediate inquiry into Oxfam's Trans-Africa campaign. But Oxfam's director, Frank Judd, says the charity will press ahead with plans to raise money for poor countries in Southern Africa, such as Mozambique. And since there's no such demand for more government aid, the British banks to write off Southern African debt. Judd says Oxfam would be letting down the public if it failed to fight to solve the problem as well as the symptoms. There is a different view apparently between us and the Commission. The Fair Habit Inquiry, we welcome the inquiry because, of course, we are totally committed to working within the law. We will therefore comply with the law. If it doesn't say what we believe, we then may argue the law should have changed, but we have to reach that point. And so the fact that they've asked us not to campaign on social, so far which we comply, but without prejudice to our conviction that we should have been, and we will be arguing that in the course of inquiry.
Meantime, the African National Congress has called on Saatchi and Saatchi, a London agency, to devise a campaign to promote the prospect of black majority rule in South Africa. The leading London advertising agency took the account to produce an unlikely pairing of the Saatchi brothers, who lost Margaret Thatcher to victory in 1979, to the ANC and its deputy president, Nelson Mandela. The agency's blue-chip client list, which includes multinationals such as Procter & Gamble, ICI and BP, might inhibit it taking on such a politically sensitive account. Representatives from the ANC have also met with Saatchi's management on a formal approach. The foreign relations with the South African government since the release of Mandela have caused concern within the ANC that pressure for sanctions and a democratic electoral system has subsided. Anglo-American, South Africa's largest company, is running an extensive press advertising campaign in Britain, checking the company's record on workplace equality and its opposition to apartheid. The ANC has also suggested that the more liberal stance that President F.W. de Klerk should not lead to a slippery of the international campaign against apartheid. British opinion formers are a key target for the ANC, as Britain has consistently refused to impose trade sanctions against South Africa. Keep talking to London.
The international perception of problems and change in South Africa seems to be altering fast and dramatically, with recent decisions of Denmark and Madagascar to re-establish ties with South Africa in one another or another form.
Hans Zinkens reports. The member countries of the Organization of African Unity decided in 1963 not to allow South African aircraft to use their airspace for flights to Europe, thus forcing South African Airways to fly around the bulge of the African continent. Certainly, the OAU decision has been eroded over the years, and nowadays, the state-owned South African Airways has official landing rights in the Ivory Coast, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Malawi, Mozambique, Botswana, Namibia, Lesotho, Swaziland, Mauritius, Reunion, and on the Comores, all African countries which were bound by the OAU not to allow South African Airways to enter their airspaces. The latest development in this regard was the announcement by the president of Madagascar, Didier Rassiraka, to restore air links and economic ties between the island republic in the Indian Ocean and South Africa, to encourage the South African government's move away from apartheid. Meanwhile, there were reports over the weekend that Denmark, a country which has thus far strongly condemned South Africa's internal politics, is about to open full diplomatic contacts with the Republic of South Africa. For more on the subject, we spoke to Mr. Anton Lubscher, South African Consul General in the Danish capital of Copenhagen.
At the same time, of course, being a Nordic country, it has to respect certain Nordic decisions vis-à-vis South Africa. So it is not a simple matter of decision which Norway can take unilaterally. You know, they have certainly had to look at the situation in other countries, and of course most of the other EC countries with the exception of Luxembourg, I think, direct representation on the level of ambassadors. That is true, and I think there Denmark is one which is lagging behind. But the Scandinavian countries as such, they are represented on a lower level, and Norway only has a consul general in Cape Town. So I cannot speak on behalf of Denmark, but I can only say that they have to look at what their colleagues have as representation in South Africa. And if they feel they've done, I think they are, possibly they'll do something about it sooner or later. Yes, the people in Denmark, I think it's a very cultural and people which are very much interested in what's happening elsewhere in the world. So, certainly, it's not a people who would like to isolate themselves from what's happening in the world, and I think in that respect, they probably do consider sending somebody there.
From the Danish capital of Copenhagen, that was Anton Lubscher, South African Consul General. And this is Hans Minkins in Johannesburg for Africa South.
And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa South. In just a moment, Sport RSA, presented by Willie Camilleri. And you're tuned to Radio RSA, the voice of South Africa, broadcasting from Johannesburg.
Sport RSA. Hello, this is Willie Camilleri reporting from Johannesburg. We've just had a fleeting visit by a French rugby delegation headed by French Federation President Albert Ferras. They watched a bit of rugby and held talks with Dr. Donny Craven and his South African Rugby Board, with State President F.W. de Klerk and the SARU President, Mr. Ibrahim Patel. In the studio, we have the editor of Radio South Africa Sport, Gerald de Kock, the sports editor of the Sunday Star, Rodney Hartman, Johannesburg star rugby writer, Barry Glasspool, and former junior Springbok and Transvaal fly-half, Hugh Bladen, who speaks first.
France and South Africa have always had a very good relationship, and I think that Boas probably wants to come and see for himself what the situation is. He's also coming for a lot of criticism because of his support for South Africa. But, you know, before he retires, maybe he'd like to leave this sort of slate clean and have a better relationship with South African rhythm. Any other thoughts, Barry, perhaps?
Yes, I think a big factor of exploring the Finch and the immediate connection with our rugby is concerned. Yes, it's very heavy with the unity talk between the South African Rugby Union and Abraham Patel and Dr. Cady's executive. There was, in fact, a firm suggestion that there would be a moratorium on tours this year, but that came really more from people outside the framework of the fabric of rugby football itself, and is not shared by a lot of people in the game. I don't necessarily go along with the view that there will be a moratorium. As far as I can gather, the two plans for the tour as part of the tour of rugby union centenary are going ahead. And while there may not be French players part of it, I think as you have said, Mr. Barras has always been a very firm friend of South African rugby. He's come out here to see for himself, and he'll have some rather interesting background to take back home with him regards to the reforms and changes that have been made.
Any thoughts, Rodney? Gerald?
I think it's very significant that he should meet with the South African state president.
Yeah.
He's a man, for us, who has a lot of influence in international rugby. And having now met with President de Klerk, he's able to gauge the political face that's going on in the country. Mm. And I just see it as being a very significant visit. How much will come out of it from a rugby point of view? Difficult to tell.
Well, Barry mentioned the talks about tours, actually. We've had a lot of talk about talk, but nothing is really happening. And I just wonder about Mr. Patel. How is he involved with rugby as such? And what is the situation? Has he got a rugby background?
Interestingly, and it hasn't really. He's pretty close to the game and has been so for many years. But more, I think, from a coaching point of view. I think he was originally a school teacher who was involved in the game at that sort of level. But I think his number one sport in his playing days is actually soccer. But he is very much involved in rugby and starting the South African Rugby Union, a union that in fact has been in existence for 100 years, and celebrated centenary, I think, a year ago. And, a lot of people didn't even realise that.
No, I didn't. That's very interesting.
I think he has got rugby at heart, yeah.
So, but what about, the talks about your fact that don't seem to be taking warfare? Mm.
I don't know, it's a very touchy subject I think in South Africa at the moment, and I don't know, it just feels as though people are waiting for someone to make a move. People are just waiting for things possibly to settle down, and they're not prepared to commit themselves to sit down and talk. Possibly if the government were to start initiating talks at that sort of level, then suddenly the sporting bodies would all sit down themselves and talk about it.
Let's look at the domestic season. How does it look at the moment? There's been a lot of movement around. I think we can just talk about the top teams, really.
It's going to be very interesting, I think, because the strength does appear to be spread out a little bit more. Of course, we've got, I think, a significant movement. So R.D. Sheldon has gone to Eastern Province, and of course, Michael Dupont. So Eastern Province will probably build their side around those two players who have vast experience in both Northern and Western Province. And of course, there's the great unknown factor of Natal. They've developed within their own province two very, very good centres. They've got two good wings. But always their problem has been up front. And right throughout the country, I believe games are won and lost this year. And until Natal gets their pack right, they are not going to be a massive factor. It looks like they are starting to get their contract. Western Province and Northern Transvaal are the main contenders because they do have the depth. They have enormous depth of young talent going to those provinces by factors of the universities and the defence forces. The two strongholds are in Northern Transvaal and Western Province.
But some question marks, I think, this season over Western Province, maybe? Mm.
Yes, that's right, Willie. But you very seldom, very rarely get a bad Western Province side. If you judge it through Stellenbosch and their performance at the Toyota Cup Championship. Yeah. But then, of course, there were several players that were missing. Wilfred Small, who's still doing duty in Italy. Very, very fine. One of the best driving. And, of course, Sapa Kamitsu, who I rate as a very, very good midfield player, very inventive, very classy player. And very good on defence too, tackles well. What worries me a little bit about looking at that's the leading provinces is the lack really at the moment of particularly good individualistic side. You know, you've seen Northern Transvaal as per usual are collectively functioning very, very efficient, limiting mistakes, keeping the pressure on the opposition, playing the game in their territory, passing mistakes behind the bar. And this they're always good at, they're disciplined, they're drilled. There's no real flair in that side. Of course, they're going to be a side to beat. Problems, I would think, will probably be the side that will have more party individuals. As I say, they're just, when they come back from overseas, again, to obviously strengthen the side. They've really had one good win under their belt, albeit against a reasonably moderate opposition. Transvaal, like Natal, are going to be a bit of an unknown quantity, I think, this year. I know there are high hopes in the Transvaal hierarchy, this could be their year. He's had about a couple of years after this thinking that we were talking about last year. But there were definite signs that some of the flaws that were so poorly exposed last year are still there. I think perhaps the surprise side this year, which you didn't mention, could be Free State. They've got some marvellous backs. I mean, if you look at the inside backs, in Henry Honeyball, in my view, they've got the only fly half in the country that actually tackles. He likes contact. He actually gets over the game, lines up to make the tackle. He's a bit of an unknown quantity, but really, very, very, very good, strong player. Helcott Miller and Evan Skeffels, outside him, and then on the flank, Chris Barton, very quick, very tricky, lovely runner. One of the few exciting players on the call will be Plessis Mole. That's why it's actually quite a blow that Carl has retired. As I was saying earlier, we need more of these players with flair, I think, who can actually lift the game, lift the level of the game. I would think that is going to make Free State a very, very difficult side to beat. But I think get some reasonable ball, will it? I know you've been away for a couple of weeks, but any opinion there?
Yeah, I've been lying on the beach and haven't seen a lot of rugby. What strikes me is that in the movement, Donnie Sherber having gone to Western Province, province having lost Coral, that you see, they've now gained Sherber, who's... he's still a very fine player. The only problem with him is that he has had a bad injury the last couple of seasons. And if he can get past that little obstacle, he could be a real force again, I think.
Okay, but every now and then they're sort of writing more. I suppose mainly because of his injury. He's 30 now. How much rugby is there left in him?
Well, you know, the move to Western Province, I think, could be a whole new lease and life for him. You know, he's after his first match with him, in which he scored two tries against South Western District, he was saying this was like one of the highlights of his career, and this was just a friendly match, and he in fact said then that he saw more ball in that particular match than he had at Eastern Province in the previous two seasons. So, you know, he's really enthusiastic, and I think that's the big thing with him, that he needs to have that enthusiasm to get him going. I think he's a genius, that guy, you know, and in the wrong sort of environment, he could quite easily get a football, and that won't be Eastern Province.
And Western Province, over the last season, they have a bit of a fly half problem as well. They're playing Leon first at the moment, but they just seem to struggle to find the right one. And if he does find the right fly half to give him enough ball and give him quick ball, then it's a flourish again.
Devastating,
yes. He needs somebody to play with him who
lays him off.
You know, if you think back against England, he scored three tries at Ellis Park. And, you know, the first try was a beautiful break by John Vallette. But Herbert's ability is to run himself into the open spaces and take that vital pass. The second try to fly half.
Errol Tobias
made all the running. And the Herbert was perfectly positioned. And once he's in the open spaces, then he's dynamite. But I think what happened in Eastern Province is that he was expected to be the playmaker, and he is not a playmaker. You know, he's a fella who runs off the ball and is magic in that situation. Let's just look at what's lacking in this rugby. I think I first noticed it last year when Springbok side played not terribly well against an invitation 15, quite a good side, I thought. I think perhaps we're out of touch. We're missing out on what's going on in Europe and in New Zealand and Australia, obviously. Our rugby is dated by, you know, perhaps almost a decade, who knows. What is the problem there, and how can we get back into it?
It's my favourite subject. I seriously believe that we
South Africans are complex people, and because of our isolation from international sport, we tend to be incredibly critical of ourselves. And if we take those two test matches, and I know Barry's going to disagree with me because we had a discussion after the Ellis Park test on this. If you take that international team that came out, there were
Manel and Bob Busy at halfback. There was Stella, there was Chave, there was...